This is Jess Explores. I'm Jess and I work in MARE, the SFI Research Center for Energy, Climate, and Marine. Join me today on a new episode of Jess Explores. On this week's episode, I want to introduce you to my new friend. His name is Bill Francois. He is an amazing human being. He is a great storyteller, particularly when it comes to the marine space. He is an author, he is a comedian, he is all around just amazing. And he agreed to do an interview with me about his book, The Eloquence of a Sardine, which, by the way, you should definitely read. It's a lot of fun. There's a lot of facts in there, a lot of stories, and a lot of experiences, which I believe all of you are going to enjoy. You can find the links to that in the description, and you know, you can always reach out if you have any specific questions. So without any further ado, here is my interview with Bill Francois.
I'm a physicist and a writer, and I'm fascinated by marine life because I've spent all my free time from as far as I can remember in the sea looking at marine creatures. So this is my passion, and it's my field of study. I study biophysics, and I write books and articles to make this world better known by the general public and to try to make everyone aware of what's happening down there under the sea.
How did you come up with the idea of like putting these stories together that way?
An image book with images, photographs, and a little bit of text explaining. And then I met a publisher who wanted me to write a book like a novel. So I made a kind of mix between the two, and I decided to make short stories because I think that's what strikes the most our attention. And I worked as a guide in a Paris aquarium for a few years, and it made me try these stories on a very large public, because in the Paris aquarium, sometimes in the same group, you have people who never saw the sea and people who are specialists of marine biology. And you have the two kinds of people in the same group, so you have to make a story where everyone can find something interesting. So it has been very challenging for me to try these stories on the people. And I came up with the ones that were working the most in real life. And I wrote them down in the book.
How did you collect the stories? Because some of the stories in this book you actually experienced, right?
Yeah, of course. Some of them are personal anecdotes and stuff that happened to me. And other ones are more historical or scientific facts. So I collected them in different ways. Of course, for the personal experience, well, you cannot look for them. You just happen to leave them at some point, because when you are out at sea, you always discover some new stuff. I'm always amazed by that. Like, even in places in the Mediterranean where I have been since I was 7 years old, and I have spent countless hours, every year, I find something new that I had never seen before. Every year, a new animal or a new plant or a new behavior of animals that I never saw. And I think there is always something new to wonder at. And this brings personal stories. But then if you dig down when you have found this new animal and try to read in books or in the scientific literature about them to understand them more, then you discover some other stories. And if you meet people who know these creatures, either scientists or sometimes fishermen or divers, you can also learn some great knowledge as well, because all the knowledge of the world is not on Google Scholar. A lot of the knowledge is just known by some people who will never publish it or anything, because they are just a fisherman somewhere in the world and they don't even know that SkyHub exists. I think there is a great amount of stories that is just known by people everywhere in the world, and it's fascinating to find them.
I totally agree. And it's one of those things when you're on a boat with somebody and you have like, you have no internet connection, and really you stare out all day and you're like, all right, look, it's all ocean, nothing else. That's when you start telling the stories.
Exactly. Yeah, it's the best. And maybe that's why the offshore environment very far away from land is so full of stories, because when you are on a boat, you have nothing else to do than open your eyes, look around, and tell stories. That's basically the two things you can do when you are out fishing or bird watching far away offshore. It's a great place for sharing stories.
What I find so fascinating about it is that there is that connection, like what you see and what somebody else sees, you can look at the same thing. You're not going to see the same thing, which is so interesting when it's offshore, because I would be looking and I would see, like, you know, birds flying around, maybe just one or two birds, and the person next to me would be like, I see nothing. It's like, no, but look right there.
Yeah, I totally agree. And this is fascinating because everyone sees a little bit of what has to be seen. And I think most of it remains unseen. And yeah, offshore, we really, really see that, because we can see 360 degrees around and everything is blue and seems completely empty. But you can see huge stuff that appears very small, like a whale would be just a little splash of water. And if you know where to look, or if you are just lucky enough to stumble upon the little fin of the whale, then you see a huge whale. But maybe your colleague who is looking the other way around will see a little black stuff as well that will be a manta ray or whatever. And yeah, I think it's really, really fascinating, the world offshore. And we often see just a really, really small percentage of what has to be seen. Like I do a lot of marlin tagging programs in the Mediterranean and in the Atlantic as well. And in some years, we ran some underwater cameras under the boat to see the behavior of the fish. And we figured out that when we were seeing one fish in the wake of the boat, one marlin, and we had really experienced crews that really were able to see them immediately. But when we were seeing one, often we were missing 10 of them. And the camera was recording 10 fish for one that we could see. And it's true with the marlin, but it's also true with the whales, with the dolphins, with every water animals. We just see a very tiny percentage of what has to be seen. And I think that's why the sea is so fascinating. Land animals are great as well. But as Mr. Hemingway said one time, he said, on land, you know that the biggest animal you can run across is an elephant. But on sea, who knows what you can find? And I think that's true. That's why it makes us dream so much.
Do you want to take us back to your beginnings, like the very, very early, because that's where the book starts, at your beginnings, and a little bit of that fear of the ocean, which I think many people have. They're a little bit afraid of this unknown and this big thing, which I think is important to remember, like there's so much to see and learn.
Yeah, it can be really frightening, the ocean, I think. It's dangerous and it's something that's beyond us. We don't tame the ocean. It's not our place where we live. It's something completely foreign and kind of infinite and really strong. So I think it's really frightening for a lot of people. When I was small, I was particularly frightened of fish. I don't really know why, because the ocean is frightening, but fish are not really that frightening. I mean, except maybe some piranhas or sharks, but most fish are not, and I was frightened of the most basic fish you can dream of, like a mullet or a sardine would frighten me terribly when I was really, really small. But then this disappeared because curiosity killed the fear. Like it was at the same time frightening, but so fascinating to see all these creatures living in the little tidal pools. And then going a bit further away, I realized that the further I got out to sea, the more fascinating the creatures were. So at the end, I was not afraid anymore. I was just intrigued.
And I think I would feel the same, like just that excitement. And then you kind of go like, oh, I wonder what that animal is. And I think if you're in, like most people that I know, once we go out snorkeling for a day, we go home and just kind of research what the fish were that we saw and like, you know, their behavior and trying to understand what we actually saw.
Oh, yeah, that's a very fun part of snorkeling as well, I think, trying to understand what you actually saw. In France, we have a great platform for that on internet that is called DORAS, D-O-R-A-S, which is the Latin name of a nudibranch that is called the DORAS. It lives in the Mediterranean. And these internet platforms, you can send a picture of anything you saw out at sea during snorkeling or diving or whatever. And there is a huge community of people that are fascinated by identifying the stuff. So if you post the picture, maybe 3 minutes later, maximum, you will have the answer. And even at night, like they are really crazy. I think it's worth it doing it even if you don't speak French, because with Google Translate or DeepL, you can really translate it easily and it's free. Open for everyone. You don't even need to subscribe to the website or whatever. You don't even need a password. And they will answer you right away. I think it's fascinating. The other day, I saw weird stuff while snorkeling. I had never snorkeled in that place in February. It was February. And there were some weird orange stuff. And I didn't even have a camera, so I drew the orange stuff on a paper. And it was not a really good drawing, but I tried to make it as good as I could. And 3 minutes later, on the website, there was a Latin name and the whole story of the marine worm that made these orange eggs.
Oh, amazing. Wow. That is so cool. That is really exciting. And it makes it so easy, like it makes it so accessible for people.
Yeah, it makes it accessible and fun, and it's a good way to share stories as well. Another time I found a weird stuff as well on a beach, a weird translucent like shell, but translucent and a bit soft. I wrote to them. 2 minutes later, they told me, try to put it in a glass of water and you will see it disappear. So I did that. The stuff disappeared. I was amazed. And then they explained me the whole story. And it was the skeleton of a little sea. It's the same family as the snails, a gasteropod. But it has little wings and it flies kind of like an angel. And it's called a sea butterfly. And these little planktonic animals that are about the size of the half of your hand, they have a completely transparent skeleton that matches the optical index of the water. So when they are in salt water, they disappear. And that's why you never see them, even though they are very, very common. Amazing story. Sword of Venus, that's the English name. The sea butterfly or the sword of Venus.
I have to check that one out. That sounds exciting.
Yeah, it's really, really amazing animal.
So if you're not snorkeling in February, and if you're not tagging melons and writing books, what do you do? Like, what does your average day look like?
I don't have an average daily life these days because I go from a project to another. So I was finishing a PhD and a few research projects last year about marine biophysics. And now I have some contracts to write some books, some more books. So I'm working on them right now. I I also work a bit as a comedian in Paris, so I give conferences and comedy shows in my free time. And so, yeah, that's kind of my schedule these days. But I would also love to make an adaptation of my book for the children, because I think it's really important. So that will probably be the next project. After the books I'm writing right now, I will try to work on a book for the children.
I would love that. Because it's so exciting when you have a group of children and you get to really play out. All right, let's talk about the ocean. What do you see? Yeah. What, you know, and tell the stories. Yeah. Because, do you know, all the stories that you wrote in the book, I can see them, you know, telling them to other people. And I did, like many of the stories you told here, I would have gone and met my colleagues or my parents or anybody. And
oh, like, great, great. Yeah.
I was like, did you know this?
I think that's the most important, and that's the best compliment you can say for my book. I want the stories to live and to be shared. So if it gives you the will to share the stories, I think I did my job. That's good.
You did. And such a cool job. You know, like what you also learn in the book, it starts out from your eyes as very young. And so you kind of understand that it's like, all right, I felt that too when I was younger. I had similar feelings. And then as you grow as a person, you also grow with the book and you kind of go like, all right, now I know this in addition to that. And there's more and more coming together. So it's really good. And the other thing is, after each story, I went on Google and I went, I need to find out more about this. So I think you did a great job of compiling the stories. And I should also mention, it's a very global perspective of the wildlife and of the fish life and all of that. It's not just one area or one region. It's really, it takes you all around the world, which is just so cool.
Yeah, I wanted to speak about marine life in general and not be restricted to the fish or the mollusks or whatever. I think there are lots of books that are really good on very precise subjects. This one is more a bit of everything, like a big mix, because the sea is like that. When you go out at sea, you see a bit of everything. And I think it gives you a better impression of how diverse and how vast this world is.
Many people don't really know this, but if you go diving at one spot and then the next day or even the same day, you move over just 10 meters, you will see something completely different. And it's just the currents. It's just how the water, you know, it changes. Everything changes down there. And it's so cool. And you can go out to the same spot every single day and you will always find something new.
And yeah, that's completely true. Completely true. We had a lockdown in France during a few months. And last year, I was in the lockdown in the south of France, really close to the sea. So I could go diving every day, but I did not go too far because of the cops. I did not want to get caught. But the house was about 10 meters from the sea, so I could go and sneak out, but I could only dive to the same spot, the really same spot, snorkeling, not really diving, and I stayed very close to the rocks because I was alone, so I did not want to do anything dangerous. I think free diving alone is kind of crazy. So I went to the same spot every time during a few months. And yeah, it's completely true. You see different stuff all the time and you discover new stuff all the time. It's really amazing. With the change of the seasons, of course, and the change of day and night, the tides, even in the Mediterranean, we have very tiny tides, but even very tiny tides can have a big effect on the marine life. And yeah, the weather can change a lot of stuff as well. The wind can bring new species with the currents. It's fascinating. It's always changing.
It is. And I think that's what I like about it too. Because you like storytelling so much and because you're so good at it, is there a story that you want to share, like one of your all-time favorites?
Oh, yeah, of course. I always want to share stories.
Yes.
What's your favorite fish or your favorite marine animal?
I mean, I love humpbacks. They are my favorite. I've seen them so many times, but humpbacks to me are just my world.
I love humpbacks too. Yeah, they are amazing. There are lots of stories about humpbacks, especially the way they are said to have a culture, which is really fascinating because it's kind of like the humans. Apparently, in the humpback songs, the humpbacks have some parts of the song that they transmit from a generation to another, and they keep singing the same songs, and each new generation adds little variations to the song. So it's fun because it's kind of what we do with our human songs. When someone, a new singer, will take an old song and sing it again in his or her own way. And I think it's the same with the humpback. So it's really amazing to see that culture in the waves.
Absolutely. Were you ever able to hear it underwater?
I have. Yeah, I did it in Australia.
How did that? Did you instantly hear it? No, because I've never gotten, like, here in Ireland, it's way too cold to be where they are, and I would never.
You have humpbacks in Ireland?
Yes, my friend. We have them about 9 months out of the year.
Really? That's amazing.
We have humpbacks.
Where in Ireland?
In West Cork.
That's amazing. I didn't know you had humpbacks.
And I, you know, my favorite sound is actually when they come to the surface and you hear that powerful of...
Oh yeah, it's amazing. It sounds kind of like a dinosaur.
It does.
I never heard a dinosaur, but I think it sounds like that.
Yeah, I would agree. But yeah, tell me when you like stuck your head into the water and heard them. Like that
was
amazing.
In Australia. And yeah, actually I heard them from very far. Like I did not even see them when I heard them, you know. But I guess you heard the whale songs from humpbacks in internet or from a CD. It was exactly the same. But what was striking was you could only hear them at a certain depth. Like I was snorkeling on the surface, and on the surface you did not hear anything, really nothing. Like you heard the water, but no whale song. And you had to dive at about 5 meters. And at some point you ran into a cold layer of water and you heard the humpbacks. And the sound was traveling only through this cold layer of water. And it bounced on the warmer layer. It bounced back down and it stayed trapped in the cold layer of water. So you could not hear the humpbacks from the surface, but you could hear them from a bit under the surface, like about 3 to 5 meters. And yeah, it was really striking because it's exactly the same sound as you hear on TV when you hear recordings of humpbacks. But the humpbacks were not there. They were really, really far away. Like we were snorkeling from the shore, and from the shore, you could barely see the blows of the humpback, like the water blow. You could barely see that. They were really far. But the sound travels really, really far away in the sea. So, yeah, it's quite amazing. Apparently, the humpbacks, you can also hear them if you go under the flotation line of your boat. Sometimes it happens you can hear them. I have some friends who heard them that way.
Okay.
Like you are in the hull of the boat, you go in the lowest place and you stick your ear to the hull, I guess, and you can sometimes hear them apparently, but it's not very common.
Well, you can hear like the dolphin clicks like that. Every now and then you could be like, if you're downstairs and you have dolphins around you, all you hear.
Yeah. This is quite fun. Quite impressive, the dolphins click.
So you studied in school. So you studied marine biophysics. Is that everything? You always knew you wanted to do that?
Yeah, I kind of always knew I wanted to do something around the sea. But I ended up choosing physics, which is a good way to understand things. Kind of quite different from the biologist point of view, but really they complement each other, you know. It's two ways of seeing the world.
How do you mean that?
I will be making a kind of overgeneralization, of course, but physics in general tries to understand the great principles behind things, but without going too much into the details. We often make fun of physicists saying that they consider chaos to be a sphere. A whale would be a sphere as well, if you see what I mean. They just consider big models to try to understand the big principles of nature, but without going too much into the details. And biologists do kind of the reverse approach. They focus on the tiny stuff, the exceptions, the great diversity of life. And that's how they understand the big stuff in the end. And I think both of them are great ways to understand different stuff. And sometimes a physicist can have the solution from a long-standing biology problem, and sometimes it can be the reverse as well. The biology approach can give you answers to questions that the physicist cannot explain. It's quite fascinating in this sense.
And I'd say it must be really challenging sometimes to build that bridge, because as you know, in academia, there is often your silo, and often it is challenging to step out of it and convince somebody else that your point of research or your part of research is relevant to them. So it must be really interesting being that bridge between the two.
Yeah, it's really interesting because it can bring different cultures together, and I think that's how great discoveries can happen.
I hope you enjoyed the interview as much as I enjoyed interviewing Bill Francois. It was just such a pleasure and joy to get to meet him online and to share stories and ideas about the marine space and to just talk about the thing that we are both so very passionate about, which is the ocean. If you want to get in touch with either of us, there is a description in the bio, and there's, of course, the links that you can just click on. Find the book, The Eloquence of a Sardine, which, again, you should definitely read. It's such an amazing book. And if you have any questions or if you want to reach out, please do not hesitate. We're here. We're the ocean community, and we're so excited that you were here with us and enjoyed this interview with us. So with that, I hope you have a wonderful week, and happy exploring.